when Vincent gets Natasha's text. It's around 1 a.m. West Coast time, but he's still wide awake, riding on a high, sativa, and wild turkey, while binge-watching episodes of Top Chef. His first reaction to the text is,
"Oh, shit."
Vincent is 33 years old, but looks like a young 40, with his premature crow's feet and a general weight-of-the-world weariness. He's handsome, in a boy-next-door kind of way, standing 6'4", and sporting a body that could still play quarterback like he did in his college days. He pads around his one-bedroom apartment, pacing and pacing, while trying to sort through and process the Venn diagram overlaps of his emotion and the anxieties that Natasha's text elicits in him. Him and Natasha, they have a history. Vincent stops to take a swig from the bottle, then sits in the recliner and types out a response to the text which says,
"Fuck you,"
in all caps, but he's unable to press send because it's true. He does indeed owe her big time. It's the kind of debt that when it comes due, you know it's going to be a huge ask.
Shit, shit, shit.
So the actual response he sends is,
"Fine. Send details, and this better not be more than the favor you're basing your ask on."
He knows he's too pissed and anxious to fall asleep now, which makes him even more pissed and anxious, which in turn makes him mull over the history of Natasha and Vincent, which makes him more pissed and anxious, and so on. It was a little over 3 years ago when Vincent and Natasha were on an overseas covert assignment and undercover. Vincent got horny and careless and was seduced by a foreign agent who was also undercover. The agent gained classified information from him, meaning Vincent was in deep shit. Natasha came to the rescue by tracking and terminating the foreign agent before the classified information went any further. But the biggest favor she did was to keep the incident from becoming part of the official record. Otherwise, Vincent's career as a federal agent would have been over. So why is he so pissed off in having to pay back the favor? After the incident, Natasha and Vincent became a thing, a hot and heavy kind of thing, which of course was against regulations, but they didn't care, given that they were a couple of mavericks in life, in work, in love. It lasted 17 weeks until Natasha left him for a college student and part-time model named Anna, a Muscovite, or so she said. Vincent, in a state of despondency, had told Natasha,
"I profess my love to you, and this is the way you pay me back?"
He was not a crier, but on this occasion, he may have shed a couple of tears. Natasha responded with,
"Grow up, Vincent. Being in love is for people who aren't in our profession. Just appreciate the good time we had as a fuck buddies and move it already."
Ever since then, Vincent thought of Natasha as a cold-hearted bitch and hated the fact that she held this huge debt over him for the past 3 years. His anger and emotional turmoil eventually exhaust him, and he falls asleep to the sound of rain. He dreams of better days with Natasha, the days when he believed that she loved him as much as he loved her. When he wakes up 5 hours later, it's still raining, and the day looks like he feels, gray and damp with misery. There's a text from Natasha waiting for him, letting him know her ETA at John Wayne Airport.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
Vincent drives up to the terminal in his 1968 Porsche Speedster with the top down. The metallic silver car is pristine and has a sex appeal that says, "You wish." Natasha standing curbside and grins upon seeing the car. Maybe she's happy to see him. Maybe it's just the car. Vincent notices that she has no luggage, only a backpack, her go bag for sure. He waves her over and she strides toward the car, taking her patented long and loping steps. She's wearing a ratty looking Hello Kitty sweatshirt and a pair of ill-fitting sweatpants for footwear, mint-colored classic Crocs, no makeup. Her hair could use a wash. Lips look chapped. Even when she's not looking her best, she is the hottest woman that Vincent has ever known. It's not even close. The thing about hotness that people get wrong is that they think it's just about the person's looks. Aesthetics are certainly important, but the hotness comes from within. It's the difference between an attractive person who's pleasing to the eye and a hot person who rocks your world. She's the kind of person you hold a grudge against for 3 years, and yet when she shows up out of nowhere, your heart suddenly thaws, and you feel like a lovesick teen. Vincent does his best to stifle his inner lovesick teen. Natasha gets into the Porsche.
I remember you telling me about this car. She's beautiful.
You look like shit.
I look like shit? Vincent, please. Do you own a mirror?
He glances at his reflection in the rearview mirror. He does look like shit. Shrugging it off, he steps on the gas and pulls into traffic.
Where to?
If there is a safe house here.
In Orange County? Not a chance. The closest are in L.A., also San Diego. Orange County's basically the forgotten stepchild.
I guess I'm staying with you then.
Nope.
Why not?
He just shrugs off her question.
What or who are you running from anyway? And by my helping you, am I going to end up in the crosshairs of whatever or whoever you're running from?
I don't know. And yes, it's a possibility.
Great. Just what I needed.
Please tell me you're still not harboring a quote-unquote broken heart over the breakup we had 3 years ago.
Don't flatter yourself.
Turning her attention to the passing view, Natasha fumes for a long moment, and then...
Fine, you wanna fuck? Is that what you want? To help you get it out of your system?
Why do you have to be so crass?
Why don't you grow up and appreciate the fact that I saved your sorry ass? And do me a solid to return the favor?
They fume in mutual silence until Natasha finally says,
Two men heavily armed broke into my house with the intent to either kidnap me or terminate me. It wasn't exactly clear.
What? Jesus, are you okay?
Yeah.
Who were they?
Don't know. Could be military or some other cover-ups. Could be in private contractors.
Who did you piss off?
No one that I can think of.
And you didn't report it? You came straight to me?
Yep. Can't trust anyone at this point. Except you.
Good thinking.
They're quiet again and just drive for a bit. Vincent downshifts and exits the freeway.
You hungry?
Starving.
There's a great little breakfast place over here. You can buy.
Oh, come on. You cheap bastard.
Hey, in my rush to come and pick you up, I forgot my fucking wallet, okay?
The Great Little Breakfast Place is a tiny nook of a restaurant situated between a defunct gas station and a dry cleaner. Not the most wholesome-looking neighborhood. The restaurant serves mainly grain bowls. There's a line out the door.
A grain bowl place on top of which I have to stand in line?
I told you, the food's good.
Didn't we pass Danny on the way here? And you know what would they have at Danny's? Pancake dripping with butter and syrup, the sausages and bacon and eggs.
That's one thing I can't understand is how you stay so fucking skinny despite how much you eat.
My big brain uses a lot of calories. Something you wouldn't understand.
Okay, well, what is big brain telling you about how you're gonna solve your current crisis?
I think this is some serious deep state shit that's going on.
She goes on to explain about the phone call from her sister and her alien boyfriend who was kidnapped, and how maybe the intruders that tried to kidnap Natasha are somehow related. Vincent doesn't blink at the explanation and takes it all in and thinks about it for a moment.
I've never gotten close to working on an extraterrestrial file, have you?
No, and I don't personally know anyone in Ovum who has.
Does this space alien boyfriend have a name?
Misha.
Okay. So you're sure that Misha was brought here to Orange County?
I'm not sure of anything, but Vera was pretty certain.
I might know a friend who might know a guy who has top secret clearance and access to those files.
The line has been inching along to where they are now the next ones to who will be entering.
So this means you're going to help me?
Do I have a fucking choice?
Sure, if you want to be an asshole and not pay me back for a huge favor I did to you.
Vincent gives a sexy smirk and raises his hands in surrender.
Can't believe that even now, you still got me pussy-whipped. In a platonic sense, of course.
Natasha smirks back at him.
You better believe it, mister.
And they sidle up to the counter under the order here sign. A server lets them in. There are a few stools open at the counter, so they get the order for here. They take a seat next to two skater boys who have a large order in front of them and are scarfing down the food like they're in a hurry. Both of them are wearing beanies pulled down low over their brows. Also, they're wearing shades indoors on an overcast day. Vincent and Natasha's orders arrive and they dig in.
It's good.
I told you.
The two youths have finished eating, but they're dawdling. When there's no more line coming through the door and the place has settled into a lull, they get up to leave but stop at the cash register. From where Vincent is sitting, he has a clear view of the youths. He stops eating and watches them. The cashier suddenly looks fearful, which draws Vincent's attention to what looks like a muzzle of a pistol in the jacket pocket of one of the youths.
Those assholes.
What?
Natasha turns to look at what Vincent's looking at.
They have the nerve to eat the great food that was specially prepared for their enjoyment, and then rob the place? Fuck that.
Vincent gets out of his seat.
What are you doing?
He opens up his jacket, revealing a holstered pistol.
That's not even a service weapon, which, by the way, is against the regulations. So what are you doing? Sit fucking down. The last thing I want is to draw attention to us. Let the local cops handle it. I mean, look around you. There are cameras everywhere in here. They are going to be arrested probably by the end of the day.
What you don't understand is this kind of thing never happens for me anymore. I'm bored out of my mind despite the fact that I'm the only agent assigned to Orange County. Nothing interesting happens over here. You know what happens in LA office? Shit happens. And in the San Diego office? Shit happens. Here? Nothing.
So what? You want to start a shootout?
Yeah, maybe.
Stop! Besides, if you start shit, I'm not going to be able to back you up. I had to ditch my weapon before boarding the flight.
Vincent reaches behind him and withdraws his service weapon and places it on the table. He unholsters his unofficial weapon.
I'll hold on to this one.
And slides it over to Natasha.
And this one is yours.
Fuck's sake, Vincent. What part I need to stay off the grid? Don't you understand?
She snatches the pistol before anyone can see it. He takes off his jacket, which is also a hoodie, and hands it to her.
Put this on. Cover your head. My aviators are in the pocket. No one's going to know who you are.
They will know who you are.
I'm not the one trying to stay off the grid. I'll say they were some vigilante who just happened to come to my aid.
Vincent, listen to me. You're not a cop.
I'm not?
Not that kind of cop. You may be maverick, but you're not a hothead. It's part why I fell in love with you.
Wait, you were in love with me?
No, never mind.
No. You were in love with me.
No, I was not. I just said so. Shit, I don't know why I said that. It's not true. You were just a person of convenience, a fuck buddy.
No. It's too late. You can't take it back. You loved me. Okay, fine. I'll do my best not to start a shootout.
Vincent whistles sharply that if you had blinked, getting everyone's attention, including the two would-be robbers. Vincent brandishes his badge and pistol. Even with shades on, it's easy to tell that the two youths are wide-eyed with surprise and fear. They immediately raise their hands. The one who was holding the cashier at gunpoint didn't even have a gun in his pocket. It was a vape pen.
Hey, next time? You guys are not going to be so lucky. Now get the fuck out of here.
It would have seemed they had literally disappeared into thin air. They sprint out of the restaurant so fast.
So that was fun, huh?
No, it was not. Can we go now?
Deep State Dossier Podcast is a production of Radio Juice Media. To learn more, go to our website, radiojuicemedia.com. The story was written by Casey Pope and produced by Mariana Baker. The podcast was narrated by Harold Baker. The voice actors are Tori and Hugo Chacon and Mariana Baker. Music composed and performed by Daniel Kaplan. Photography by Luke Aronson. If you like this podcast, you might also enjoy Casey's novels, available on Amazon, or visit his website at fugitivejuicemedia.com. Support Deep State Dossier on Patreon at patreon.com/deepstatedossier for a whole bunch of exclusive stuff. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us 5 stars and leave a nice review. For more information, including supporting material for each episode, visit radiojuicemedia.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks for listening.